And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Tom Fornelli joins me as we review the Week 8 wreckage, our weekly review of all that happened in college football, beginning in the SEC, beginning with Alabama's convincing win against Texas A&M. Of course, we will hit on Ohio State falling at Penn State and more of the shakeups within the top 10, the undefeated teams we trust, the undefeated teams we don't, all that and much, much more fun with Tom Fornelli. Make sure that you subscribe to the SEC on CBS podcast on iTunes or subscribe on Stitcher. Use any of those methods so that you can get the podcast first and enjoy Week 8 reviewing the wreckage. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports, I am your host, Chip Patterson. Tom Fornelli. Hello, Tom. We are here to review the wreckage from Week 8 and give you fantasy basketball advice. We apologize for the slight delay. We had a lot of work to get out at CBSSports.com, and it is available over at CBSSports.com. And now we turn our attention to what happened, Tom, and what we have to look forward to as the Week 8 point in the season was one that saw one of our favorite teams fall. And that, of course, being Ohio State, losing at Penn State. We will get to the Big Ten in a bit. We begin in the SEC for the podcast namesake, and an Alabama team that in this game with the brightest spotlight against the Texas A&M team, and again, the final score here, 33-14. Tom, I thought Texas A&M played this game for a while about as good as you could play it. There were mistakes that were made. You had your non-offensive touchdown streak extended, and for the most part, like until Jalen Hurts really got loose early in the game, I didn't think that Alabama's offense was in a position where that they were going to run away with this thing. Obviously, in the third quarter, things kind of blew open. I thought Texas A&M played this game well, and still, even playing this game well, they lost by 19. What'd you have to take away? We'll say first from the Texas A&M side, and then as we send Alabama off into its bye week, you know, what was the latest bit of goodness that you observed from the Tide?
I don't know if I completely agree with the Texas A&M playing well part. I feel like for most of the first half, Alabama was pretty much in complete control of the game and dominating the game. They just weren't scoring points. I mean, it was 13-0, and you felt like, you know, Alabama – I mean, Texas A&M's defense tightened up, like, in the red zone or, you know, once Alabama got into Texas A&M territory, they were able to get their act together and hold Alabama to a field goal a few times. But I felt like Alabama was in control of that game from the start, and then it was just the fact that they couldn't get touchdowns and they had to settle for field goals, so it's only 13-0. And then Texas A&M finally scores a touchdown in the first half. And it, you know, all of a sudden, what was a blowout is now you realize still it's just a 13-7 game. And then A&M even got the lead there for a second. But I never really felt like A&M was a threat to win this game. I thought Alabama was pretty much in control the whole way. So I don't think A&M looked bad. I just feel like that it was kind of clear while watching that game on the field that one of these teams is better than the other. And well, I think what sucked for me personally, I was really looking forward to watching Cam Robinson versus Myles Garrett all day. But it was painfully evident that Myles Garrett was at 70% at best on that ankle.
See, I apologize for misphrasing that. I said Texas A&M played about as well as they could. Like, there was a decided advantage, both teams, neutral field, fully healthy. Alabama's still a two-touchdown favorite in this game. I was thinking the idea that they were tightening up in the red zone, the idea that Alabama was getting these drives but not able to finish, you know, that is the way when you're a two-touchdown underdog that you try and give yourself a shot to win. And sure enough, like you said, you know, with the fact that it was only 13-0 or 13-7, then 14-13, like, there were those moments where you could have been the worst team but won the game. Texas A&M had that going for a little bit.
A&M needed Alabama to screw up.
Right.
And Alabama had a couple turnovers, which helped keep Texas A&M in the game. It's just, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, A&M still only had 278 yards of offense. So, I mean, it's – it wasn't a great performance from it. I think the defense did pretty well. That's the way that I would take it. I'd say Texas A&M's defense pretty much did everything it could.
I just don't think that highly of Texas A&M's offense. I think they look better on paper than they are.
Just let it down.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, what's your latest bit of reasons to be excited, reasons to love Alabama?
Jonathan Allen can now fly like Superman.
Amazing.
And sack your quarterback. That was one of my favorite football moments of the year so far. And then, you know, of course, he also had another touchdown because I think Allen's in the Heisman talk now. Because I feel like this year is the year, since it's so clearly going to be Lamar Jackson winning it. I feel like this is the year where we're finally able to get – this is one of those years you can get some defensive finalists.
Get real weird with the finalists.
Yeah, that have no shot of winning. But I'm thinking we can get both Peppers and Jonathan Allen to New York since everybody's voting for Lamar Jackson anyway.
Hell yeah.
I think that should be a – movement that we try to get going over the last month or so here of the voting.
What do we want to Jonathan Jabril 2016
D's finalists because he used the defense
and D's I gotcha. Jonathan Allen, I love that play that you, the Superman play. Jonathan Allen beats the offensive lineman, I think it was a guard, with ease, and it's a chip block either from Travion Williams or Keith Ford, the running back for Texas A&M.
Some poor soul.
But it's a very poor attempt at a chip block. It is much closer to rolling over and playing dead with a bear coming. And
how would you approach the situation, Chip?
Jonathan Allen just barely lets, let's say Travion Williams, barely lets Williams' body hit his shin as he just takes off.
It was like, you know, he was flying through the air like Superman.
Yeah, and then he has the fumble return touchdown, his second non-offensive touchdown in the season. After the game, Jonathan Allen telling Allie LaForce, I mean, in the most horrifying, wonderful, beautiful moments of football circumstance in 2016, he told Allie LaForce that we come into every game like the New England Patriots and we don't want to give them nothing and we want to be perfect. The mindset of Jonathan Allen, one of the best footballers in America, and the Alabama defense, the best unit in America, is that we want to be Patriots good.
That's decent.
That's terrifying.
Another takeaway from this game, Eddie Jackson out for the year.
Oh, bad.
Which sucks for Eddie Jackson, but at the same time, you know, you might see people say it's bad for Alabama. I don't think it's bad for Alabama. I don't think there's any injury that's bad for Alabama on defense.
No, but
just some other stud they'll throw out there, but it sucks for Eddie Jackson.
It sucks for Eddie Jackson. And I think it sucks for Eddie Jackson in the way that Eddie Jackson is so good that Eddie Jackson is that odd equation in a playoff game that runs a punt back for a touchdown.
Yeah. I think it hurts their special teams more than it hurts the defense.
Agreed. That's what I was thinking. Just like the ability to flip the field and change a game through special teams. I mean, we're talking about Eddie Jackson, a guy who had 3 punt return touchdowns in 7 games this season.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's often.
That's almost half a game. It's like 42.8% of the time he's scoring a return touchdown.
So Leonard Fournette's back. And LSU's offense has now set a school offensive record in each game that it has taken the field under Ed Orgeron.
We've always known that Ed Orgeron was the offensive guru whiz kid that LSU needed.
I hope I'm not mispronouncing it. It's like Esminger. I'm gonna have to look it up. But it's former LSU quarterback who is now offensive coordinator and play caller. So. You know, he's a real coach on the field.
He is. First one in and the last one to leave. I think it's pretty simple what happened here. They're just able to run the ball.
Their offensive line, as said all last week, is getting healthier. And 16 carries, 284 for Leonard Fournette, which is a majority of the 311 offensive yards with 4 rushing touchdowns against Ole Miss. 38-21 win for the Tigers. They can run the ball now. What about the other side of the ball, Tom? Because I think that the defense getting healthier, but also just playing better certainly seems to be helping the equation as well. Two picks on Mr. Chad Kelly here in the game.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss is an offense that we saw earlier this year was able to move the ball against Alabama. And they really weren't able to do much against LSU on Saturday night. They only had 325 yards of offense. They couldn't do anything on third down. They couldn't run the ball, but that's, you know, that's typical.
Standard.
But just passing-wise, it was a very ugly performance from Chad Kelly. They were only at 6.5 yards an attempt. There were the two interceptions. I mean, this was a game that LSU turned the ball over three times and still won by 17. So I think that on both sides of the ball, if you look at it right now, I feel like what we've talked about in the past was once Alabama got past A&M, and then in the fashion it did, it's Alabama and 13 other teams in the SEC. And I still feel that way to a certain extent. It's just when we look at the way LSU has been playing recently, and I'm sure as we'll get to in a little bit here too, Auburn, there are still two roadblocks in Alabama's way for the rest of this season.
The Auburn game in Tuscaloosa, but the LSU game, which comes up after this week off for both teams.
In Baton Rouge.
That will be in Baton Rouge, down in Tiger Stadium in Death Valley, where dreams come to die.
Yeah, pretty much. And the Coach O going to have them boys ready.
All right, so let's go ahead and pivot. You just mentioned them, those Auburn Tigers. Speaking of setting records, how about a whopping 543 team rushing yards, seven rushing touchdowns on the day, and Auburn was down a running back. You said this. All right, two things where I want to start the conversation. Number one, I believe you said this on Twitter, in our workroom, throughout the day, predicting it going in. Some of this result does, in fact, deserve to be credit for Auburn, but some of this result is also a reality of the situation. Arkansas playing its eighth game in as many weeks. And number two, a big place where that was evident had to be where Auburn's defensive line, refreshed, recharged, rejuvenated, totally overwhelmed Arkansas up front. They got a lot of push right off the snap, and just 25 team rushing yards on 31 official rushing attempts for Arkansas. If Arkansas can't get the ground game going, and I know that their passing attack's been better this year with Austin Allen, but if they can't get the ground game going, they're not going to get anything going on offense. They need that balance there. So, again, impressed, hat tip, great job, Auburn, totaling up all those rushing yards and getting that stat total. But I do think that credit also deserves to be given to Auburn's defense and an acknowledgement of where Arkansas was mentally and physically at this point in the season.
Yeah, you win a game 56-3, nobody had a bad day.
Right.
well, the other team did. Yeah, I tweeted earlier in the game that I said, you know, Auburn hasn't had a bye week yet. Arkansas hasn't had a bye week yet. Auburn's coming off one, and you can see it. You know, it's clearly evident right now. I don't think that speaks for 56-3, though. I mean, even if Arkansas is refreshed the way they played in this game, maybe they don't lose by 53, but I don't think Arkansas was beating Auburn on Saturday with a week of rest. Auburn just – Gus has got it going again on offense. It's really what it comes down to. The defense has been there all year. Auburn's defense since day one has been a solid to really good unit at times. And that's been the case all season long. It's just now the offense is finally getting going like a Gus Malzahn offense that we've always come to expect or had we at least seen in the past. And that just makes Auburn a very scary team going forward, because I still don't think it's going to beat Alabama, but I definitely give it a much better chance of doing it now than I had been 2-3 weeks ago.
All right, so Auburn is now 5-2, 3-1 in conference play, part of a large collection of 5-2 teams. We always talk about, you know, so we've seen Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State all with three conference losses. Is that the separation? Do you think that's an accurate depiction of where the top shelf, bottom shelf in the SEC West is?
Yeah.
Where you got Alabama, A&M, Auburn, LSU up top, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Mississippi State down low.
Yeah, I would still put Ole Miss at the top of that, like bottom tier, because you know they do have four losses, but their four losses aren't horrible by any means. Their worst loss is Arkansas. And that's not a bad loss. So I would put Ole Miss at the top of that, maybe not too far away from the top tier. But no, I think the standings are an accurate reflection of what we've seen.
The disaster zone over on the east side of the bracket, of the standings.
Where the Kentucky Wildcats are in second place.
Where Kentucky wins with a 51-yard field goal as time expires to improve to 3-2 in conference play, 4-3 overall. Tom, the Kentucky Wildcats still have Austin Peay, which we predict will be a win for the Wildcats. Which means
I would imagine so.
They just need one more to get bowl eligible.
I mean, they're winning out. This is an unstoppable juggernaut.
Oh, here you go again. Tom Fornelli back on his Kentucky will win the SEC East. Man, it's been a while since I've had Tom Fornelli, noted Kentucky football homer, back on the podcast.
Yeah. No, this is, they're going bowling, and it's like, you know, a few weeks ago we're sitting there thinking Mark Stoops is going to be fired. We're talking about maybe Les Miles considering that Kentucky job, or at least I was writing it as a possibility in a Friday Five. And now I don't think that Kentucky job's going to be open at the end of the season unless they want to fire Mark Stoops after he leads them to a bowl game, because they're going.
Middle Tennessee beat Missouri in Columbia.
Yeah, so I think Kentucky will be able to do the same.
South Carolina, we're reviewing the SEC East. South Carolina, one score winner at home against UMass.
Yeah.
Big debut for Jake Bentley.
I had South Carolina covering in that one, and early on it looked good. South Carolina scored 27 points in the first half.
Lock of the week, baby. UMass doesn't go away. You just need to wait a minute, man. and then Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was down 14-7 to Tennessee State at the end of the first quarter.
It was only 21-17 at halftime.
But 135-17. Good on you, Derek Mason. The Doors now 4-4, going into an off week with Auburn, Missouri, Mississippi, and Tennessee left.
You know, people will often refer to something like the SEC East as a dumpster fire, but sometimes you can find things of value in a dumpster.
Like,
I don't know what I'm finding in the SEC East of any real value. Florida's probably going to win it. Tennessee is just a corpse of a team at this point, as everybody loses, you know, another limb every week.
Listen, I wouldn't get clothes or food from the SEC East dumpster, but I would take a side table or a coffee table.
But it's wobbly.
It's very wobbly. Very wobbly.
One of those legs.
Very little investment if this thing gets broken, no doubt.
There's like water rings on it from glasses that weren't using coasters.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what you get from the dumpster.
Like, yeah, that's what the SEC, if you're like moving into your very first apartment, whether in college or after college, and you're just looking for any kind of cheap furniture you can get to have, I guess then the SEC East could be in handy.
The Florida Gators are that side table that's a little bit wobbly, has some rings on it, but it'll take a lamp.
I might just take a cardboard box. I don't know.
All right, we got. Let's take this thing national. We got to get to back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so let's let them understand. Ohio State, 24-21 losers. Ohio State last 2 weeks kind of felt like this loss is coming. And sometimes with championship teams, you can feel that loss bubbling and they get it together and the train doesn't go off the tracks and you grit it out. You know, people always look and say that was a moment when a championship team survived. Well, not a great performance for Ohio State against the Nittany Lions. Not a great game for JT Barrett. And in Urban Meyer's own words, not a great team right now. Now, this is a team that, at its best, I said was going to look great and put up a good fight against the best teams in the country in the playoff. Too talented, too many options on offense, too much skill, speed, athleticism on defense. I was very, very excited about this Ohio State team. and now bad habits 2 weeks in a row have not taken Ohio State out of the playoff race at all, but certainly made life a lot harder. And Tom, I would say that I am more shaken by the way this loss went down than the fact that Ohio State lost in Penn State in Happy Valley, because you and I were both saying this is the perfect spot for Penn State to play one of its best games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, this was the second straight week that Ohio State's playing a Saturday night primetime game on the road against a team coming off a bye.
I guess a better than average Power 5 team. Like,
yeah.
Wisconsin's one of the best teams in the country. Penn State in the top 25 at 5-2. I'll say Penn State's a top 35 team. Yeah, 35.
And this is Penn State's Super Bowl, pretty much. So, I mean, there's a reason I had Penn State plus 19.5 as my lock of the week, because that was just a ridiculous spread for this game. You knew it was going to be close. I didn't think Penn State would pull off the upset, but just watching the game, I mean, Ohio State outplayed Penn State in this game pretty badly. Penn State did not have the best night. They had 276 yards of offense. Saquon Barkley had 99 yards rushing on 12 carries, which was great, but everybody else in that Penn State offense really did not do much of anything at all. Trace McSorley had an awful night. The run game overall was just not good. Its defense played good enough. Or well enough. Defense played great. Penn State defense played really well and limited Ohio State's offense. And it just gave Penn State a chance to be in the game at the end. And combine that with some special teams gaffes by Ohio State, the largest obviously being the blocked field goal that was returned for the game-winning touchdown.
The most obvious being the seven points that Penn State directly got without having to put its offense on the field.
Exactly. I mean, so you have to give their defense credit, because without the way that defense played, Penn State's not in that position, because the offense, they couldn't count on their offense to win that game for them on Saturday night. The offense wasn't going to be able to do it. And so you have to give Penn State credit there, but I feel like this was more of an Ohio State shortcoming than it was a Penn State overcoming something, or Penn State making it. Like, I know it's a statement win for Franklin. This is in the biggest win that he's had at Penn State. I mean, it's the first time he's beaten a ranked team at Penn State. So, but I don't think that this means that quote unquote Penn State is back. I still think that Penn State going forward.
Wait. Is that a thing?
I'm sure it is in some people's. If you're a Penn State fan, I bet there are at least a few of you thinking that, you know, oh yeah, we're back. This is it. This is the signature win. Everything starts getting good again right now. I don't think that's the case.
No. I think the backness should not be judged on the special teams wins in Happy Valley. I think the backness of Penn State was determined on September 24th in Ann Arbor, when Michigan ran for 6 rushing touchdowns and won by 39.
Yeah, so exactly.
How back is Penn State? Still getting stomped in the big house.
Yeah, so I mean, my concern with Ohio State is it was kind of like the same thing that we saw at Michigan State last year, where you don't really quite understand what the game plan is on offense. And we saw it a little bit in Wisconsin too, although they were able to pull it off in the end. It's just, I feel like Ohio State at times in their play calling expects JT Barrett to do too much, or has too much on JT Barrett's plate, where it's like, you know, he's good and you know, he's, you know, the leader of that offense and he's capable of doing a lot of things, but take some of the load off him. I mean, Curtis Samuel is a good player. Mike Weber is a very good player. Give these guys more opportunities to run the ball, because one thing that Ohio State, I think, is lacking this year on offense is they don't really have that burner at receiver, that real true deep threat that they've always had, where, you know, they run the ball, and then they'll just beat you deep for a touchdown. That is not there this year, at least not that I've seen. It's not there on a consistent basis. And I think Ohio State needs to find another way besides, okay, GT, go do everything.
I think there is a thing, you know, you and I like to, as observers of the college football world from our interesting perspective, where we try and have a passion and a connection to all the individual local fan bases and conversations, one thing that I'm noticing is Ohio State fans that are not only jumping on your play calling critique, but in particular asking why the heck Curtis Samuel's not getting the ball more.
I don't know.
Yeah, the idea that Curtis Samuel, you should go out on your fastball, and Curtis Samuel's the best offensive talent on that team.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, again, you have to give Penn State's defense credit, because that running game as a whole on Saturday night, Ohio State's running, they really weren't able to do much. They did try to run the ball a lot, and Penn State wasn't giving up much. They didn't give it much through the air either. So you have to give Penn State's credit there on defense. It's just as a whole, the game plan, I feel like it's 80% JT Barrett, and it needs to be somewhere more about 55-60. Mm. Because, he's really talented, but you also have recruited a whole crap load of 4 and 5 stars at other positions too. So maybe give them the ball more often.
All right. There are two games that are not statistical anomalies, but certainly worth consideration. I would like to start with the Utah Utes, where Joe Williams coming back 332 rushing yards.
He's having a better post-retirement career than Michael Jordan did.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. I thought this was huge. First of all, just Joe Williams stepping into this spot, just one of the most unique stories that you're going to see in college football. This Utah team's banged up not only at the running back position, they also are banged up in the secondary, where Marcus Williams, one of the best secondary players, is also dealing with injuries. It is the most rushing yards by a Utah player in a single game. It's also the most rushing yards recorded by an FBS player this season. I don't know if 332 is going to get toppled or not, but in terms of the team success, it brings Utah now to 4-1 in conference play, 7-1 overall, and the remaining schedule is such: Washington at home, we'll get to that game here in a second, at Arizona State, Oregon, Colorado. Looks like two games that should be definite wins, which would get them to 9-1 or 9-3. And maybe, depending on how things go against Colorado and Washington, we could be looking at the Utah Utes flirting with a 9 or 10 win season, which, again, considering the current state of this team, both health, talent, on paper, and otherwise, really, really surprising. And also, how the heck did this team lose to Cal on a goal line stand? How the heck is this Utah team that is competing for a Pac-12 title not only lost, but lost on 4th and goal from the 1 at Cal?
That was really strange as it happened. That's going to be one of those things that at the end of the year you're going to be looking back.
What?
It's still going to be really strange trying to figure that one out.
All right, so before we get to Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Utah, UCLA, what do you make of the Utes? And as you're looking ahead, Washington took care of business. Another just strong victory for the Huskies. This one was one where Miles Gaskin, the running back, finally got going. It had been a while, sort of a little bit of a slow start for him. How do you see this one? I mean, just a massive game coming up this weekend in Salt Lake City. How do you see Utah, Washington? What'd you get from them in week 8?
First of all, one of my favorite stats from the Utah-UCLA game is Mike Fafal threw 70 times in one game.
70?
UCLA only ran the ball 16 times. And I'm not even sure, minus the sacks, I think it's actually less than that. So UCLA came into this game not even trying to run the ball against this Utah defense. It's like Jim Moore is like, yeah, we're not going to be able to run the ball, so let's just chuck it 70 times. And they scored 45 points, so hey. But my thing is, with Utah going forward to play Washington and Salt Lake City this week, I don't give Utah much of a chance to win that game. Just because I still, even after this team put up 52 points against UCLA and Joe Williams ran for 332 yards and 4 touchdowns, this still does not strike me as a great offensive team. And Joe Williams is not going to be able to rush for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns against Washington. The Washington defense and the UCLA defense are two very, very different things. So I think it's a good Utah team. I just still think it's a little too one-sided to really consider it a true threat to at least beat Washington. Now, saying that, this is a Utah team that could still win the South, because I do think it's going to beat Arizona State, and I think it should beat Oregon, and I think it's going to all come down to that final weekend of the regular season when they're playing Colorado.
Oh, that is still the Pac-12 South being decided in Boulder, Colorado is my favorite thing of the 2016 football season.
And the Pac-12 North being decided in Washington in the Apple Cup.
Oh.
I can't remember the exact stat, but it made me laugh a lot. Somebody broke down the Pac-12 by regions and the records. They did it by
Southern California is the worst.
Yeah, they did it by, you know, the state of Washington, then the Rocky Mountains, which were Utah and Colorado. And then they combined the, you know, California schools, the Arizona schools, and the Oregon schools. It's just like, wow.
All right, so let's talk about a mile of offense.
Okay.
To be specific, 0.9705 miles of offense. Because that's mm-hmm. what you get when two teams total 1,708 yards of offense. Oklahoma and Texas Tech magically both finishing with exactly the same number of yards, 854, but not the same number of points, as Oklahoma wins 66-59. They combined for 17 touchdowns, only four punts in this game, and Patrick Mahomes ties the NCAA passing record with 734 yards, breaks the individual total offense record with 819 yards, as he was also the Red Raiders' leading rusher, and they lost. Lincoln Riley... Lincoln Riley had Oklahoma's offense just basically taking everything that Texas Tech would give them, which was everything. Seven touchdown passes for Baker Mayfield. But man, I almost come out of this game with more takeaways for Texas Tech than Oklahoma because of the astonishment that your brain feels when looking at the Texas Tech stats, the records broken, and realizing that it all occurred in a loss.
The game was a joke, Chip. Just be honest. That wasn't a football game. That was a video game played on easy. That was just sad. I mean, I didn't watch the whole thing. In fact, I couldn't watch the end because it was broadcast on Fox, and the local Fox affiliate in Chicago, after the Cubs clinched the NLCS, went to Cubs celebration coverage.
Because Chicago hasn't been in the World Series in a billion years.
Yeah, apparently. So I was actually kind of ticked off because I wanted to watch the end because, you know, it was still close at the end, obviously. It was a one-score game. And the last 5 minutes of the game, I didn't get to see a single play of. But from what I did get to see, that game was a joke. Texas Tech was 20 of 25 on third down. I mean, it was stupid. It was a stupid video game being played by two big – it was the most stereotypical Big 12 game you could freaking imagine. Like, if you were just joking around with your friends about what Big 12 football is like, but you were doing it in a mean way, this is the game you'd come up with, and it actually happened. And Oklahoma's the best team in the Big 12, and it gave up 59 points and 854 yards to Texas Tech.
All right, so – Where are you at with West Virginia? Because now West Virginia 3-0 in conference play, 6-0 overall. I'm not going to say that beating Kansas State, Texas Tech, and TCU makes for a college football playoff contending resume, but I think that in particular the one-sidedness of the Texas Tech and TCU wins and the fact that we just saw Kansas State go and beat Texas kind of has me feeling a little bit better about West Virginia, particularly going into – it's good for me to understand what West Virginia is now. Because if West Virginia beats Oklahoma State, it follows that up with Kansas and Texas, which means that we're looking at a still undefeated or one-loss team going into mid-November. And I don't know if I'm all in on West Virginia, but it's time to start taking them seriously.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm in the same boat. I am not on the West Virginia's going to win the Big 12 and maybe is a playoff team type of possibility there, but I'm taking it all hell of a lot more seriously than I was 2 weeks ago. And it's because of that defense. And it's like you said, it's not so much who they've beaten, it's just how they've beaten them in the process, because they held Texas Tech to 17 points in Lubbock last week. TCU comes to Morgantown, a TCU offense that, while not really the same offense that we saw last year, you know, when Trevon Boykin and Josh Dotson and those guys were healthy and playing, was still a pretty good offense and still one capable of putting up points this year, holds them to 10 points. It's a legit team. It's just I don't know if it's a top four, top five team as much as it's a team that should definitely be in and around the top 10.
I think that West Virginia, by the way, does get to host Oklahoma and Baylor.
Yeah.
I think West Virginia has two more conference losses, and I think Oklahoma max has one conference loss.
See, I don't know what's going to happen in the Big 12 from this point out, because as like when we in the Picks podcast last week, you guys asked me why I was taking Texas Tech to cover. You saw that Oklahoma defense, right?
I mean, I saw the players that were on the field when Oklahoma was supposed to be playing defense.
Like, Oklahoma just gave up 850 yards to Texas Tech. I can't sit there and say anything about, oh, I see only one loss in that team's future. I can see three losses if you're playing that kind of defense. I don't know. The Big 12, I still think Oklahoma's the best team in the Big 12, but I think West Virginia might be your favorite in the Big 12 at this point, just based on what we've seen.
With West Virginia's defense playing pretty well.
Yeah, because like I said, the one – in the Big 12 every year, the thing that happens is the team that ends up winning the conference has a great offense like everybody else, but they actually play defense too. And if you're looking at the Big 12 right now, there's only one team that even comes close to falling in the they play good defense too category, and it's West Virginia.
I got yelled at by Jerry Palm for, quote, giving Oklahoma fans hope on the college football playoff.
Oklahoma's not going to the playoff no matter what happens.
I think a two-loss Big 12 champion Oklahoma team gets in.
Nope. Uh-uh.
Why are y'all so quick because to write off Carnage?
It had two marquee games to show off earlier this year against Houston and Ohio State. It lost them both. Winning the Big 12 in a year where nobody respects the Big 12 is not going to be enough to get Oklahoma into the playoff.
You guys are awfully confident for mid-October.
Chip, I wrote a column in mid-September saying that Big 12's playoff hopes were done. And nothing has happened to make me change my mind on that.
All right.
Unless Washington loses three and Clemson and the ACC just completely fold and collapse in on themselves, the Big 12's not getting in the playoff.
But the two things you just mentioned are very possible.
Washington's not going down. Washington might lose once.
Hey, I'm still waiting for that soft Washington team that I was calling for in August to show up. They haven't yet.
No, they're not going to. They might screw up along the way, but I don't see them being bad all of a sudden.
You're gonna see me as the most annoying freezing cold take guy when Washington loses. It'll be like an honest mistake. You know what I'm saying? It might even be controversial, you know, where they should have won but lose, and I'm going to be on the hill like,
Told you. Told you this team was trash.
Just putting up trash emojis all day. All right.
Garbage.
What
up? Washington garbage.
Nebraska did not cover against Purdue like we predicted. Wisconsin, good. Yeah. Wisconsin, Iowa.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was, I hope you didn't watch.
I mean, it was a busy noon slate. I kept it moving. So that was the good thing was since I wasn't connected to Wisconsin, Iowa for too long, I was never put through, I was never really lulled to sleep.
My favorite moment is late in that game. They're down 17-9, 5 minutes left or so. It's a 4th-and-5 or something. And Ferentz chooses to kick the field goal, which would still leave it as – or no, it was 14-6. I'm sorry. It wasn't – 17-9 was fine. But it was 14-6. And Ferentz chooses to kick the field goal, which would mean that Iowa still needed a touchdown.
And a touch – it's like, well, we don't want to do the touchdown and the extra point now.
Yeah, and so Ferentz is asked about after the game – and he says, well, it's a 2-score game at that point, so we figured we got to get the field goal, so we just take the field goal now, and then we'll come and get the touchdown later. And the reporter says, but if you score the touchdown and you get the 2-point conversion, it's a tie game. And Fred's is just like, yeah, well, that's the decision we made.
I got it.
And by the way, Iowa missed the field goal, but that doesn't really matter to the story.
Louisville 54, NC State 13.
Yeah.
Lamar's going to do that.
That'll happen to you. Sorry, NC State. You can't play everybody in a hurricane.
Sorry. All right, cool. Anything else that stood out to you that you want to point out before we put a wrap on this and send it on out to the iTunes feed?
Good night, Houston.
Oh, yeah. Later.
That's three. You know, that's only two losses, but they nearly lost to Tulsa 2 weeks ago. That's 3 weeks in a row. Houston has not looked very good.
As
I led this week's Monday After with, that's all very good news for Boise, because Boise right now is probably getting that group of five spot.
Not Western Michigan?
No, because, I mean, Boise State beat Washington State in non-conference, which looks better and better every week, considering how Washington State's playing. It's now the second-best team in the Pac-12 North. And while Western Michigan beat Northwestern in Illinois, Northwestern's not as good of a win as Washington State and Oregon. And, you know, Boise also beat Oregon State, which kind of washes out Western Michigan's win against Illinois. And you just look at the conferences, the Mountain West is always going to get more respect nationally than the MAC will. And then the fact that it's Boise is an established brand. It has been in BCS games before. The committee's going to go with Boise over Western Michigan. I mean, just look at the polls right now. Boise's ranked 13 and Western Michigan's ranked 20 or 21. So it's 7 or 8 spots ahead of them in both the polls, and the committee's not going to think any differently.
All right, that's true. Very fair. He is Tom Fornelli. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. He will be giving you all of the updates from our fantasy basketball draft on Monday evening. So tune in for that. I got a top 5 pick. Really excited. Fingers crossed for Boogie. We'll see what happens. Tom.
I've got the 11th pick, so I have no idea what I'm going to be taking.
Enjoy picking on the turn and working the waiver wire.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, dude.
Later.